Welcome to Podcasts, recorded live at the Center for Spiritual Living in Portland, Oregon. We have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the Online tab. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its video podcast, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.
So, long, long ago, there was a samurai warrior. He was a very good samurai, which meant that he caused a great deal of suffering and grief for a lot of people. And after years of this, he became quite concerned with the state of his soul. He started thinking a lot about heaven and hell. And so he decided that he needed to learn more about heaven and hell. And he heard there was a great teacher that lived far away on a mountain. And he determined to find this teacher and to ask this teacher, please teach me about heaven and hell. So he set out walking, and after many days of walking, he finally arrived at the doorstep, and he knocks on the door, and this small elderly woman answers, and upon seeing a stranger, she says, "Who are you, and what can I do for you?" Well, he tells her, "You know, I'm a samurai, I've caused lots of suffering. I'm worried for my soul. Will you please teach me about heaven and hell?" And the woman immediately gets this disgusted look on her face. She's like, "What? Me? Teach you? You're dirty. You stink. You're disgusting. You repulse me. I will never teach you." So the samurai, enraged, grabs his sword, and just as he's at the top of his swing, the woman says, "That is hell." So the samurai drops his sword, and he's overcome with feelings of gratitude and peace. He feels seen. He feels heard. He knows that he matters. And with tears streaming down his face, he says to the woman, "You risked your life to teach me." And she says, "And that is heaven." Heaven and hell are not places, locations that we go to upon our death. They have everything to do with the state of our being and our consciousness here, now, in our hearts and minds. And that's what we want to clear up today. These ideas of heaven and hell, and that heaven is indeed within us. So first, there is no hell. Just as I've said so far this month, there is no sin with a capital S, there is no evil with a capital E, as in an evil force in the world, and there is no hell, a place that God assigns us to upon our death for having sinned, or according to some religions, because we did not accept a particular persona as our personal Lord and Savior. Much of these ideas come to us, at least those of us who come from Christian backgrounds and Islamic backgrounds too, come from the idea of Judgment Day, which in the Christian Bible is found in the book of Revelations. This idea that there will be a second coming of Christ, and at that time, those of us who are fit and good and perfect people will be saved, and many, many more of us will not be saved. And somehow we will live out all eternity in a suffering, fiery place. Well, I want to clear up what we teach here is a center for spiritual living and in this principle of science of mind. Like I already said, there is no hell, because, as we've already covered, God is love and loving. We can never be outside God's love. And there is no sin but a mistake. And like any loving parent, as all of you who are parents and guardians know, you don't condemn your child to suffering merely because they have made mistakes. That's not what God does. And this whole concept that in the book of Revelations, let's clear up what that book is about. It is not about the end times, the second coming of Christ, and the end of the world and humanity. It is not about that whatsoever. It's actually all about the end times for the Roman Empire and Caesar Nero. The book is largely the letters from John to seven Christian communities, which means that these Christian communities would have read these letters to their congregations when they came together to meet. They needed hope in that day. What they needed to know is that eventually the Roman Empire would fall and that eventually Caesar Nero would no longer be in power, because the people of that time were treated as second-class citizens in the Roman Empire. So many of these people that John was writing to had very difficult lives as subjects of the Roman Empire, and they needed to know that they would be saved someday from that. 666 is actually code language for Caesar. And this was all understood at that time because you weren't allowed to speak out against the emperor, so you had to use code language. And that's what 666 was. The city on the seven hills, everybody knew at that time that that was Rome. So the book of Revelations was all about being saved from a tyrant in that day. It has nothing to do with our end times. So now, having cleared up that there is no place, hell, that we're going to go to someday, we actually have a definition of hell in science of mind, and it is a discordant state of being, a belief in duality, a sense of separation from God, a belief that our good is always to be and never is. Hell is not a location. So hell is an experience within, but here's the thing, it's an experience and condition that does not have to be. To the extent we're experiencing hell in our hearts and minds, we can change it. As we discussed last week, we can use our ability to create. We can use the power of affirmative prayer to change our beliefs about ourselves and our world and about God to create a better life. We don't have to experience hell in our hearts and mind. We can change it and experience more heaven within. Tomorrow, we celebrate Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so I got to wondering, what did this great teacher have to say about heaven and hell? This man who is steeped in the teachings of Jesus. He wrote in a letter to a friend, "I do not believe in hell as a place of a literal burning fire. Hell to me is a condition of being out of fellowship with God. It is man's refusal to accept the grace of God. It is the state in which the individual continues to experience the frustrations, contradictions, and agonies of earthly life. Hell is as real as absolute loneliness and isolation. So that's Dr. King's perspective on hell. So what is heaven? He goes on to write in this letter, "On the other hand, heaven is a state in which man finds himself in eternal fellowship with God. It is a release from the trials and tribulations of life. Heaven is as real as friendship and an idea." And in the science of mind, we define heaven as a state of happiness. Heaven is within. It is the real state of being. If we abide in the Spirit and it abides in us, in harmony, in power, in peace, and our thought is friendly, happy, and confident, our kingdom of heaven is a good place in which to live. So heaven is the ultimate reality, not hell. Just as we've said throughout this month, darkness is not a thing in and of itself. It is the absence of light. Sin or evil is not a thing in and of itself. It is the absence of good. Hell is not a thing in and of itself. It is the absence of a heavenly consciousness. You know, in Hinduism, they have this idea in the Upanishads of Sat-Chit-Ananda. Sat-Chit-Ananda. You often see it as one word, but it's actually three Sanskrit words that mean truth, consciousness, and bliss. It's shorthand for the heavenly consciousness, the bliss consciousness. And that bliss consciousness we experience when we know and feel that unity and wholeness of everything. When we feel that oneness with Brahman, with the Godhead, right? And that this bliss consciousness is the ultimate goal of yoga, of real yoga, not hot yoga or whatever it is that we have around here. But the real yoga path is about that, is attaining that consciousness all the time while we're still here on earth. And so if heaven is not a place either that we go to, then what about those experiences of some people, their near-death experiences? They come back and they speak of this incredible, beautiful, bright light and this absolute, almost overwhelming, unconditional love that they feel. Is that a place? From our Declaration of Principles, we believe in the eternality, the immortality, and the continuity of the individual soul forever and ever expanding. So what that means is when we make that great transition and we drop this physical body, we are in a state of pure consciousness. And when we are in a state of pure consciousness, of course, that is that bliss consciousness. We've dropped this body and all the hard experiences that come with it, and we are in a heavenly state, a heavenly consciousness. More than an actual physical place. You know, we hear all the time how more and more people are moving away from more traditional religions, that attendance at all of our churches is down, and whatever faith path it is. We hear this all the time, right? People are turning away from it. And yet, the same polls show that people are still very spiritual. I actually find hope in this. Because what it means is we in the collective human experience are dropping those false beliefs, and we're much more interested in the truth. So we're dropping that belief. We're leaving behind that belief in hell and damnation and moving closer and closer to knowing the ultimate truth about ourselves, our world, about creation, and about God. So how do we attain this heaven within? If it's not a place we go to, but it's within, how do we get there? Again, from our Declaration of Principles, we believe that heaven is within and that we experience it to the degree that we become conscious of it. Sounds simple enough. Become conscious of it, which means we're at choice. We can choose to cultivate this. We can choose to give ourselves this great gift of this heavenly awareness, this inner happiness. And why is it important that we do this? Because the more we commune with that inner heaven, the more we have an antidote to the fear and anxiety we experience as we interact with the world that is sometimes harsh. It gives us that inner peace, that inner knowing, and it makes it just a little easier to be in the world. Jesus, one of our great teachers, taught to his disciples two things that are very relevant here. First, he also taught, like many great teachers, that heaven is within. But he also told them, you know, when you're building your treasure, don't build it. He said, don't bury your treasure in the earth. And by that, what he meant was don't put it in the ground. Don't put it in the earthly world where it can corrode and erode and even be stolen from us. No, lay up your treasure in heaven, which means build your treasure in here. Build your inner knowing and your inner consciousness, because this, what's in here, cannot be corroded, cannot be taken from us. This doesn't mean that we can't experience joy and beauty and peace in the world. What it means is that if we know our inner heaven, if we have that, then we're able to recognize and participate in beauty and joy and peace. But if our inner experience in our hearts and minds is pretty hellish, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to recognize and participate in the joy and peace and beauty in the world. And to the extent that we might accidentally trip upon it, it's fleeting. It's impermanent. But if we have that inner knowing, it's much more lasting. I bet every one of us knows somebody who appears to be very successful when it comes to material aspect of life, and they're absolutely miserable. Right? They got the house and the cars and the vacations. They got it all. And they're miserable. And I would posit that that's because they don't take time to experience their inner heaven or to remove the blocks, the healing work and the forgiveness work that would remove the blocks to experiencing that. So, practices to cultivate this inner awareness of heaven within. Regular meditation and mindfulness practice. And I highly recommend occasional meditation retreats, which is one of my great dreams to bring here to this community. Occasional meditation retreats. I would love for us to experience that together. Prayer, not prayer with an agenda, not prayer trying to get something. That is good and right, and yes, use prayer in that way. And once in a while, use prayer that's all about just communing with the divine, recognizing the divine and knowing your oneness with it, the first two steps of prayer, and then just bask in that. Chanting. There's a reason some of the more traditional orders chant in community. And we're actually going to do a little bit of that in a few moments. Forgiveness and gratitude, two of our spiritual superpowers that remind us of our inner heaven. And of course, many of us experience this inner heaven in moments of solitude. These are things that we can all do. This becoming consciously aware of the inner heaven, we all have the ability to become still and know. Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman was raised in Orlando, Florida during the days of Jim Crow. So he experienced a lot of harshness of life, and yet even as a child, he had this ability to find his inner heaven. He wrote, "As a child, I was accustomed to spend many hours alone in my rowboat, fishing along the river, when there was no sound save the lapping of the waves against the boat. These were times when it seemed as if the earth and river and the sky and I were one beat of the same pulse. It was a time of watching and waiting for what I did not know, yet I always knew. There would come a moment when beyond the single pulse beat, there was a sense of presence which seemed always to speak to me. My response to the sense of presence always had the quality of personal communion. There was no voice. There was no image. There was no vision. There was God." We, all people, can have that personal communion with the indwelling presence. We can put aside our fears of hell, which is not real, and know that which is real, the heaven within. Thank you. So, we are going to chant together as our prayer today. Some of you may know this already, but there's actually a Science of Mind chant that goes like this. It's actually the basis of the song that we sing as a community at the beginning of each service this month. It goes like this. It has four lines. I'm sure you'll catch on very quickly. It's, "There's only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect, that life is my life now." So let's say it together once and then we'll start chanting. There is only one life, that life is God's life, that life is perfect, that life is my life now. So what I encourage you to do, if it's comfortable for you, is to close your eyes or soften the gaze and then go within. Go within, kind of withdraw within, and try to feel these words, and feel the truth of these words as we say them together. There's only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. And so it is, and so we let it be. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you happen to be in the Portland, Oregon area, we'd love to have you visit in person. The Portland Center for Spiritual Living is located at 6211 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Our inspirational service is at 11 a.m. every Sunday. We also have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the online tab. We have a variety of content dedicated specifically for our podcast listeners. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its podcasts, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Our website is also the place to learn more about what's going on at the center or to contact us. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.